Don't say.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
You know, there used to be only two ways to meet for business, over the phone or in person. Now there's a better way. Use GoToMeeting to meet online. With GoToMeeting, everyone sees your computer desktop on their computer screen. So you get the best of both worlds. It's like meeting in person, but without wasting time and money traveling. And your conference calls will be more effective. The best part is that you can actually try it for free. That's right, GoToMeeting is free right now for 30 days. For this special offer, you must visit www.gotomeeting.com/podcasts. That's gotomeeting.com/podcasts for a free trial. And welcome to another edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. This is your host, Andrew Horowitz. And we got lots to talk about because lots going on. We got Greece. We got materials companies putting out some negative earnings. We have the financials and the consumer discretionary is doing really well. What's going on with the economy? Not really so much conflicting numbers for the United States. Matter of fact, the United States has pretty much been on the line. But yet we have what's going on in Europe and the questions surrounding China and what they're doing right now. So lots to talk about. And I thought that we haven't had my good friend Frank Herzio on for a while. And I thought that we would bring him back and kind of have him as a co-host, if you will, for the entire show. Usually we have him as just a guest, but we're going to have him on for the whole show. So we're going to bring him on right now. Frank, how you doing, buddy?
Good. I like the thought of co-host. That means I can ask you questions too, right?
I may not be able to answer them as well as you answer me.
I doubt that, but
so yeah, Frank's one of my one of my favorite guys. I mean, probably the favorite guy. Actually, we're gonna hopefully come and visit you soon in your new place in Florida.
Yeah, come on down, man! I can't wait to see you and the family. It's gonna be cool.
Yeah. So, could you talk up a little bit? I got a little. It's not. I can't hear you.
Sure.
Put the microphone closer to you, or something.
Okay. There you go.
Okay. Because we want to get every single breath and sound out of Frank Herzio that we can. All right, let's talk about earnings season. We're right in the middle of earnings season here, right? We're at the end of April. Two weeks have gone by, 2.5 weeks. We saw most of the major banks report with some numbers that would just, you know, make anybody stand up and notice and say, wow, that's pretty amazing. We saw some material companies, some of the big boys report. We've seen some mixed reaction. I mean, we've seen things like stocks running up into an earnings number and then kind of just falling a little bit after the fact. We've seen stocks kind of like a Chipotle and a Netflix running up and then just catapulting higher. And then we've seen some of the things like an Amazon, you know, come out with some numbers and then kind of fall over that because I think there's a lot of run-up. You know, right now I think 80% or 85% of earnings have have beaten. In other words, the S&P 500, of the earnings that came in, 85% of the companies have beaten the analyst EPS. What do you think about that?
Not surprising. I mean, these companies have plenty of more room to cut costs. They have, you know, 10, 20, 30, 50,000 employees. You're getting the same kind of output per employee as they were when they were fully staffed. And now they've cut back production, like I'm talking about. We'll talk about people here, but they actually cut back employees. And productivity is almost as high as when they weren't there. So, you know, it's not surprising to me. And now you're seeing a lot of the stimulus stuff, a lot of the economy get better. So now you're seeing demand and you throw that into the mix. And a lot of these large cap companies are really starting to benefit. If you think about it, you know, we went through a very tough period. A lot of the competition is gone. And now, you know, when the big guys and they have a ton of cash, what is it, 10, 12% of their total assets are in cash right now. They can go out, make acquisitions and spend a lot of money. We're seeing that with oil companies increasing CapEx by 12% from last year. So these companies are beginning to spend, which is nice to see because a lot of times, you know, in past cycles, they just like to spend at the top. At least it's nice to see that they're spending at the bottom here.
You know, one of the things that I've noticed is that there is a lot of cash, obviously. A lot of the cash was brought in due to a lot of debt issues, bonds that were issued. Here's what's really interesting. I read this gentleman named Brian Reynolds. And from time to time, he has a piece that I read that talks about how the credit market really is a... It's really the pointer. It's really the arrow to where the equity markets will go. And one of the things he talks about is that there was so much credit issuance, and even as there's been historic credit issuance, there's still credit not only being issued but being absorbed by the market pretty regularly. Mm-hmm. And you know, companies are now have the advantage of issuing the credit at a much lower cost, right? So let's say they used to issue it at, I don't know, 4%, 5%. Maybe they can issue it at 2% right now. Well, that's a big savings for them. Plus, they issue a lot more, and then they can put more cash on their balance sheets, et cetera. But in doing so, it also has a secondary point that it aids them in the ability to do share buybacks and increase dividends. And we're seeing a lot of that go on, too.
Well, you know what? I'm not a big fan of buybacks, and I don't want to see companies buying back their stock today. They were supposed to buy it a year ago.
Right.
And I think that's the worst use of cash. For some reason, managers have a they just – you'd think they would know the most about their stock. They know most about their company, but when it comes to the stock price, they don't know anything for some reason. And they seem to purchase these shares at the top almost all the time. I'd rather see them increase dividends, and there's a reason for that. Interest rates are zero. People are dying at getting calls every single day. Even my mom has, you know, CDs rolling over. Where could I put this? I need interest. And that's the key. I mean, if you're looking at companies like Verizon, where you're seeing, you know, earnings come down, AT&T and stuff like that, their yields are what's attractive. That's what's keeping the stock up. People love going into these companies. And I would do everything I can right now in this market of 0% interest rates. The Fed made it clear it's going to stay. Maybe not at zero, but they're going to stay low until 2012. And low, I mean, maybe we get up to 2%. And you know, that's going to keep yields low. And people are starving for that right now. So, I mean, they're buying junk bonds like crazy. So the people are looking for yields right now. I think that's a great way to put cash to work and also start, you know, buying up some of these small competitors, start spending as the economy gets better. And, you know, the economy, I think, is going to get better. Even from here over the next 6 months to 12 months, 2011, I think late 2011, we're going to run into some serious problems. But right now, not a bad time to spend and raise your dividend.
You know, one of the things that we've also seen happen with this earnings is that, and earnings season is always very volatile, of course. And earnings season, by the way, always goes on. It's four earnings seasons a year. And it's only a little lull in between. And it does taper off after, you know, kind of this week, next week, it kind of starts tapering off a little bit.
Yeah, but you know what? You bring up a good point. It tapers off. But for me, I have stocks that are 10 and small caps, it gets extremely busy 2 weeks from now, believe it or not. You see a lot of these small caps, and they don't have the leverage that the large caps have where they can cut costs and are seeing demand. That, you know, they have their big customers spending more. These small companies, it's going to be interesting because they've benefited tremendously, which you know. I mean, these companies are up 200-300% from the bottom. They're going to report starting like next week and on of the next 3 week period. And so, you know, after the big guys report, we had, you know, Microsoft, Amazon, all the big guys reported, Google, Apple. Those little companies is a good place to look at and make money. You see a lot of discrepancies. Sometimes these stocks get hit 20-30% because they warn. But the small cap, you know, not to interrupt you, but that small cap, the market, those guys are really going to start reporting in about a week or two.
Well, that's exactly my point, though. So now you have this kind of rolling situation where you had the big caps, and the big caps, as you said, I think is a great point, that they took a lot of share. They took, they had the ability to, it's almost like the perfect plan in a way, right? If you're the big guy and you know you're going to survive, what a perfect plan. Not that it, this is not, I'm not saying this from a conspiracy side of things. I'm just saying this in general. You know, you could pretty much wipe out your competition in a very quick manner and then come back much stronger because you don't have the competition, number one. And number two, you do things to really re-engineer your entire process to give you so much of a better earnings possibility moving forward from a low base.
And it's always a learning process. If you notice, you know who has the most cash on the balance sheets?
Who?
Technology companies.
Right.
You know why?
Right,
because they went through this in 1999, 2000 when the market crashed. These guys were dying. The survivors were like, okay, listen, we learned from our mistakes. And if you notice, I mean, you see the cash balances on Microsoft, Apple, Google are enormous. So these guys are like, hey, if the market comes down, that's great news for us. We have billions. We could enter any industry we want to. I mean, we talk about $20, $30, $40 billion in cash these guys have. And, you know, it's just as they go through this process, that's why you're seeing a lot of small caps really get killed. And the large caps, they, you know, people have been in the market for a long time. They learn their lesson.
Yeah, the small cap market, the general Russell 2000 has done extremely well, but there are pockets of small caps that have just gotten hammered.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. And that's the old story of, you know, the corner, you know, whether it's the hardware store or whether it's the office supplier and Office Depot and Home Depot. It's the classic story about, you know, a Home Depot opens up on the corner and you're a small to even a mid-size hardware store, you're going out of business. That's it. End of sentence. And that's kind of what's gone on here. But let's talk about some of these interesting movements of the stock. So we have a lot of stocks that we've seen that earning comes out. They come out bad. We saw last week Bucyrus, as a matter of fact. This is a company that makes very big machinery for, we'll call it earth digging equipment. I guess that's the best way to describe it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's a couple of competitors out there. There's Joy Global, and you could kind of put them in the same genre, maybe as Caterpillar, somewhere in there.
Yeah.
You know, Caterpillar is more of a mover. Bucyrus is more of the digger. And, you know, obviously, as material company costs go higher, companies can then spend more, and companies want to drill for whether it's gold or coal or whatever it is. These basic machinery, I mean, you know, could be used for that. So what was interesting was there was a few notes out of the last few weeks that said, hey, you know, we don't see that there's any orders in the pipeline. We recently visited management, and it doesn't, and the stock goes up and up and up. Not, you know, not terribly high, but it's still continuing up. Earnings come out, and at first they're down about 7% right after the earnings, and then all of a sudden it starts lifting up. Even though the company in their conference call, the miss was large. By the way, the miss was about 30-cent miss.
The guidance was very good, though, right?
The guidance was good, but at the same time, mm-hmm. while their guidance was good, they said that there's a lot of activity out there, but we're not seeing it in bookings.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to wonder if the guidance is so good, is it just because of a hangover from something they had, you know, already in the hopper? Is it, you know, just speculation that things will do better? Is it just, you know, a discussion so that the stock doesn't plummet? Because it was down 7%, I saw, early that mm-hmm. day. And then it came up to maybe only about 4% down. Now, I don't know where it's going to go the next number of weeks from here. But this is something that we've seen. We've seen stocks dropping off and then just rising. Right. Same thing happened with F5 Networks, FFIV. Dropped off after hours and the morning was down and then just came back up like 7%. What's going on?
It's tough to say, and I think you really have to look at these companies on an individual basis. When it comes to bookings, I would guess that, you know, it's nice to have someone commit capital long-term to you, you know, and you could put it in your backlog and say, okay, these guys are doing a project. And I think people are hesitant because they see what's going on. They know the government changes its mind on different industries, and maybe they get bailed out, or the next month they can get taxed, you know, 15% of their revenue. I mean, look at the medical device companies. Well, all of a sudden, that innovation tax, you're taxing people. I mean, these are companies that save lives, that create products that save lives, and now they're getting taxed. And it's going to create $40 billion over the next 10 years, which is a surprise. So you don't know what the government's going to do because it's so unpredictable, which is difficult mm-hmm. to either be in the industry or don't be in the industry. But, you know, for Bucyrus, you know, even Travelers we saw today, and Travelers reported an absolutely horrible quarter.
Horrible.
And you could say it's one time and a catastrophe with what was a Chile earthquake and you know, the snowstorms and everything. But it's down 1%, which is ridiculous. So, you know, these companies, there's just a bias to go higher. I will say, though, there are some companies that just really were bad and they didn't come back, like Qualcomm, eBay, Gilead. You know, there's some companies that actually said, all right, things are really bad. And if you look at Amazon, Amazon's kind of a crazy company. The valuation is so high. And, you know, I would never tell anyone to short Amazon because it just seems like that company is going to go higher no matter what. I hate to say that as an analyst, but the numbers really don't matter sometimes. It just has you know, you look at that momentum and it keeps going higher. But, you know, they're not reporting. They don't break down their sales individually. So you don't know, like, you know, Kindles, they might tell you how many, but they really don't tell you, like, to break it down, like Best Buy. Like, they'll say, you know, computers are really strong and cell phones are really big. They don't break down, and they sell everything. It would be nice. Now, this quarter, they also said they're not going to provide gross margins. They'd rather report operating margins because it's a better sign of business. And gross margins were obviously not as good as expected. So, you know, it's like they report what people want to hear.
Right,
you know what I mean?
Right,
so that's
right.
Why, for me, I would be a seller of the stock. You just said that I was going to short it. But it just, if I had a position to make me say, okay, why? You know, I want to know, just be stable. You know, you report the same thing. Now you're reporting metrics that are a better indication, what, so that we think your company's doing better than it really is when everybody else is reporting gross margins. You're reporting operating margins. Why don't you reporting both? So it's just funny, like, the accounting shenanigans that you're seeing here. And I would think that's the reason why Amazon's selling.
Well, no. You can calculate any one of those that you want. I mean, if they only provide one or the other, it doesn't matter. We just look at their you know, the 10-Q and just take it apart.
Well, they said that even in the 10-Q, that, you know, that the gross margins, well, you can take them apart, but it's just, they're like, well, you know, we're not really going to report. And they said, you know, operating margins are a much better indicator. Like, I would think gross margins, of course, operating margins are important, but gross margins, why would you even say that for? It's just very frustrating where they're like, oh, well, that's not a basis of how good our company is doing. So it was very frustrating to me. I really do believe that's why the stock's coming down. I actually saw a couple posts on that.
Yeah, I mean, I not to belabor the margin point, but I like to say gross and net so I can kind of look at the trend and look where the chunky money was spent. You know,
if you're a technology company, yeah, margins are just you know, one of the biggest things that you look for, and it's
but they're
the
a retail
why.
Company. They're a retail company is what they are.
Yeah, it's just like Research and Motion. Right, right. I mean, same thing.
Right.
Well, they're retail. They're, you know what? They are a retail company, but their Kindle is like enormous. It accounts for an enormous amount of profits.
But it's still a retail products. Company.
Yeah, you could say that about that. Best Buy is a retail company.
Apple's
too,
a retail company too.
Yeah, so I mean, they are a retail company. I mean,
but
I'm
Microsoft.
Just
I don't see Microsoft as a retail company. I see them technology.
No.
That's different.
No, I see them as a technology company. Absolutely.
So just getting back to Qualcomm for a second, just for 1 second on Qualcomm. The thing about Qualcomm that's the most disturbing to me was that just a few weeks back, management came in and upped guidance. Remember that? This is the second time they did this. Actually, they upped guidance and they came out with a disastrous quarter. And they came out with, you know, nothing to say good about the future.
And Qualcomm's interesting because almost every single analyst that covers the stock has a strong buy on it. I think that's amazing. I also think it's a big sell sign. I'm going to say something that I'd probably get 25 negative emails, maybe 100 emails. But I think I wouldn't be a buyer on Apple here either. I just there's three analysts out of like 38, 39 that don't have a strong buy in it. That just tells me, hey, you know what? I can't see Apple selling 10 million iPods. I don't know who's buying iPods, but 10 million in the quarter. I know there's still global demand, but iPods, I just couldn't believe that number. That was amazing to me. But and Mac sales are growing, and we know the iPhone. I just think right now, what Apple, what everybody, I mean, you can't say a negative thing about Apple. I wouldn't tell people to buy it at this level, but going back to Qualcomm, everybody loves that stock. And you know what? They don't just sell like Apple sells the iPhone. They sell high quality products. They sell the crappy products too, Qualcomm. So
right.
And their crappy products are you know building up inventory, and they can't get rid of them as quick as they're selling the good products. And it's such a huge enormous company that's really hurting them. That's what hurt them when they won the last time. For some reason they raised their guidance, which you know to raise your guidance and then come out with this quarter, obviously management is not in touch with the public, because you know you're supposed to give out this perception that, hey, you know what, things are getting better, and they weren't getting better, and people bought the stock and entered it, and then they got killed again. So that's a credibility problem and something that, you know, I'd stay away from Qualcomm right now.
Yeah, no, I agree. The credibility and the whole thought of trusting management in the future is really a very difficult thing. Speaking of which, there's a few credibility matters that I wanted to talk to you about. First of all, I don't watch this very often. I haven't been looking at steel companies lately. We bought AK Steel some time ago. We moved out of it in a very timely manner, I must say, only about a couple of 3 weeks ago. And AK Steel plummeted. It's been like a straight line down. Now, AK Steel makes steel primarily for the automobile sector versus a Nucor or U.S. Steel that is much more diversified, right? So.
Yeah.
So last night I happened to see our favorite Jim Cramer on talking with the CEO of Nucor and a steel company, very diversified steel company. One of the things that came up was, where are the sales coming from? And I got to tell you something. I was really surprised about this, because the commentary from the CEO was that, you know, he has not seen any significant amount of orders come through that have dropped through from the stimulus package. He does a lot of rebar, which should be, you know, used in the construction, I guess, of roadways and bridges, et cetera. And he has not seen sales that even are remotely looking like any stimulus is passing through. And he went on and on and on about, you know, why is that the case? Why are we not seeing this? You know, and I don't think he was saying it from just his company. I think he was saying it in general that, you know, this is what we need to build America, blah, blah, blah. I mean, what is the story with that?
You know, Nucor is a funny company, because I like to listen to conference calls, and Nucor always has a negative tone on their conference calls. And I've used that before and said, listen, Nucor is saying this, so you have to be careful. And they seem like they've been saying that for the past year while everybody's doing better than them. So I think this is particularly to Nucor, where I don't think you could take what they're saying and go out the whole entire industry. That's just my opinion. And Nucor is one of the one company I would say that about. Where, you know, maybe if GE or something or you know, McDermott makes a comment on an industry, you know, I might listen a little bit. But Nucor is just, I don't know, I can't gauge. It seems like they always have that negative tone. Now, where's the demand coming from? I don't know. Maybe it's not coming through them. But I do know that the stimulus package was, you know, it was mandated that money be spent by the end of 2011. And I know we only spent less than two-thirds of that. So that's either a major catalyst or the government might say, hey, you know what, the economy is doing pretty good. Maybe we don't have to spend that much. I hope that doesn't happen. And, you know, based on the law and what they wrote and everything, what they passed through Congress, that shouldn't happen. But they change their mind every single day. And that goes into one of my plays, like Mueller Water, MWA. My thesis was that $6 billion is coming into the water industry. This company's not doing too good. So once this money comes in, it's like free cash to them. They're going to benefit. Now, that's to water infrastructure. But this money's not really coming in, and you're seeing costs rise. So, you know, I'm a little worried about this quarter. I think eventually it's going to come. But it's an interesting point that he brings up the stimulus plan because, you know, if someone's like really complaining that we need money, the stimulus plan, and not making money like everybody else is in this market right now, I really think that it's a company problem, not an industry problem.
What about, you know, the whole idea that, you know, costs are going up? You know, we looked at PPI this week and there was a 7% year over year change in PPI. But when you look at it month over month, it's flat. Nothing to speak of. And the same thing happened almost identically last month as well. And the whole idea there is that there is no inflation out there because we're looking month over month. You got to be careful not to just look year over year. You know, when you, especially when you strip out food and energy, obviously. But food and energy, there's a lot of costs that go to the consumer for that. But yet at the same time, nobody seems to care there's any inflationary pressures at all out there. Yet we see that the steel companies are raising their pricing. It looks like the coal companies for the coking coal are going to be raising their pricing. We're seeing that food pricing has gone up in some areas. Ex beef, which is off the hook. I mean, there's this whole issue going on with beef, obviously, a shortage of it and all. But when does that actually flow through?
Well, we saw Greenspan lower rates in 2003, 2004 to 1%, and everybody thought he was the best guy ever, and you know they were cheering him until about 5 years later, until 2007, when the market really hit a bubble, and that's when the markets really crashed, and we saw people spend because of the policy changes, and they were lending to anybody, and you didn't have to put any money down. So, you know, if you look at that last pattern, and we're just going to look at that pattern right now, you see a five-year trend, and people are just jumping on this inflation thing, and you have to buy gold immediately. Inflation doesn't happen overnight. It's not going to happen next year. Will it happen? I can guarantee it's going to happen. We're spending money like crazy, but I don't think it's going to happen in the short term. And inflation, as long as inflation is low, the Fed's saying basically that, hey, you know what, we're keeping interest rates low. So right now, people are going to love the Fed. You're hearing positive comments on Bernanke and Geithner, right, for the first time ever. And everybody hated Geithner. And you know, Bernanke's kind of like a couple, I think it was like 6 months ago, sentiment changed on him. And everyone's like, yeah, you know, he saved the economy. Now it's Geithner. Everybody loves Geithner now. Everybody hated him a couple months ago. Now the economy's doing better. These guys are going to be heroes right now. 3 years, 4 years from now, I think we're going to see that we made one of the biggest policy mistakes in our country's history. I really believe that keeping interest rates at zero for years, and that's what they intend to do. So I think, I mean, raise it to 1%, raise it to 2%, we're at zero. We were at 1% with Greenspan. Look what it did to us. Look what happened to our economy, but it took a long time. So I guess to break down what I'm saying, I think we're going to see continued stronger conditions in the market, but you know, I would be careful, say about 12 to 18 months, you're probably going to see signs of inflation. And, you know, we're kind of seeing it with the 10-year right now.
Right. So when you talk about the zero interest rate, I mean, really, if you think about the process of who that benefits the most, aside from, of course, maybe homeowners that could benefit from a better credit cost, et cetera, one of the people or the sector is clearly banking. We know that they're lending money out at, I don't know, you know, 2, 3% and 4%, 5%. And they're getting it basically through the back door, borrowing it at zero. Or very low cost for them. Now, the numbers that came out from the banking industry, we saw J.P. Morgan and Goldman, and we saw Capital One came out with a number that was just eye-popping, just eye-popping. I mean, beat by 84 cents. We saw Wells and all that. I mean, is this something that's going to continue with the banking sector, or is this these numbers the are they something you can really bank on? No pun intended.
I think you have to worry a little bit, and it's not because of the regulation, and we'll talk about that in a minute. I would be taking profits right now in some of these financials, and here's why. They're just huge cash cows right now, and people don't realize. They say, hey, Frank, you know, you're right on the Tens newsletter, and you know, you're looking at Citigroup, and it's $5, and people say, yeah, you know, $5 is cheap. Let me explain something to you about Citigroup. Based on all of their dilution right now, they're a bigger company than Oracle, Pfizer, and Intel. Intel just reported one of the best quarters in its history with its highest margins. So you're looking
at margins, by the way, were like 89%. Weren't they 89?
What's that?
What was Intel's margin?
Oh, I forgot what their margin. I know they were blowout.
It was
margins.
It was ridiculous numbers.
It was ridiculous. So, you know, and we're talking about a company that's operating all cylinders right now in Citigroup, where people don't even know what's going on with the company still. Really, they have things in there. You know, hedge funds are selling different divisions that I didn't even know existed when I looked at it. So you're looking at Citigroup, and even to put that in perspective, how big Citigroup is at five, if people think, I heard, you know, and I won't mention any names, but people saying it's going to go to 10. If it goes to 10, it's almost going to be bigger than ExxonMobil, which would be the biggest company. If that company goes to 10, you got to think that the rest of the financials are going to do good. So Bank of America already has a bigger market cap. You're looking at Wells Fargo already has a bigger market cap. And if this happens, if this trend continues, you're going to see those three banks, the biggest companies in the world. And I think that Washington may, I mean, people may want to burn down Washington if that happens, especially Main Street. If we see the three banks that almost went out of business in 1 year, in like 2 year time, because of what we did, and we changed, said that we couldn't short these guys, and we changed their accounting structure and changed their mark-to-market accounting, and invested so much money in these businesses, I don't see that happening. So I think that, that's why you're seeing so much on the regulation front. You know, Obama, this is something that Obama could relate with the public with. It's not like healthcare and cap and trade. People hate him because of this. So I think they're going to push the issue of regulation, and I would be taking profits in banks. I can't see them getting much bigger than they are now. They are going to continue to do good, but they have to watch out. Just like from the political end, you can't let these guys get any bigger than they are because they're huge. The Citigroup is ranked 18th largest company on the S&P 500 right now. And well, Wells Fargo and Bank of America even higher than that.
Well, what happened was, though, on Thursday of last week, you know, President Obama went to essentially scold Wall Street. He went down to point a finger and say, you know what, you've been bad boys, but you know what, we want you to work with us, not against us, and tried to lay out some form of financial reform. Well, before he did so, markets were down about 1.2, 1.3%. This combined with the fact that there was some doings in Greece as usual that day. And as soon as he went and finished his speech, I think everybody said, wait a minute, there's no teeth in this again. This is exactly what happened with the healthcare for a while. And markets shot up, recovered an entire 1.3%, actually went up a couple of maybe 10 basis points or so. So we're talking about 1.3% recovery for the S&P 500, which is very, very heavily weighted into, or 17-18% in banks. You know, is this all a lot of fluff, or is there really anything that's going to be heavy teeth?
Here's what I think would happen. I think Obama went there trying to be a tough guy, and when he got up on that podium, he took a look around the room and said, and saw the people who are actually in that room and said, wow, these are the people that could easily get me elected, just the people in this room next term.
Really?
That's how powerful that room was. Wow. So it almost like he toned it down completely, which is surprising. But it made sense from a political view because those are the most powerful people in a room. Again, that's Wall Street right there. And I know Main Street's not doing that well. And, you know, for someone who's talked tough, as you know, who's talked a tough game, he actually went there. And it wasn't really so tough of a speech. And I think that's why the markets really rebounded.
Yeah, I mean, it's remarkable to me, you know, just look at the Goldman Sachs situation. You and I talked about this a lot. You and I talked about when Goldman Sachs was accused of fraud by the SEC that Friday. Very odd day for that to happen. Oftentimes, the SEC doesn't do any kind of filings like this during the open hours of the market, so they don't create any kind of not only uncertainty, but imbalance in the market. And they come along and they come out with this at about 10 o'clock in the morning or so, that Goldman Sachs is charged with fraud, blah, blah, blah. But yet, just that day or maybe the day later, there's an announcement. It was a 3-2 vote, then softening the blow of it, right? Mm-hmm. And then there is some other discussion that inside the SEC, there, you know, maybe have some proof that Goldman's not so guilty. I mean, talk about that. You and I
mean, yeah, it's like Paul. I think the other guys in a trade, who was it, ACA was
yeah.
it?
Uh-huh.
They actually knew that there was someone at, they were talking to Paulson, like some of the guys at Paulson, knowing that they were on the other end of the trade. And that's like the basis for the argument. But this is so politically motivated with everything going out, just, you know, how they announced it, when they announced it, the timing, and there's really nothing there. It just shows how the SEC is really, I don't want to say a bogus operation, which kind of they are, but it's just you had so much more ammo to come with them with the AIG thing. You had Goldman taking on all the risk in the world, and I'm okay if a company takes on risk and make money, but Goldman took on risk and they bet the wrong way, and you know what? The government was there. It's okay, and gave them a lifeline, and then they gave them a lifeline through AIG, which is very frustrating, and you know that I don't agree with. Now, if Goldman wants to continue to take on these risks and make these profits, that's fine. I'm cool with it. I just don't like it when you get it wrong. You had the government there to pick you up. That's just not right. It's not capitalism. But I just think this is so politically motivated, and is it a big deal? And I would say it is a big deal, and surprising because I've gotten a lot of emails saying, you know, it's not a big deal. You know, most of the time, these things when they have an SEC complaint, it gets settled, and you know, that's fine. But you have to realize where the markets are right now. We're up tremendously. I mean, if this happens when the market's at a low and we saw a lot of lawsuits, you know, it's kind of like it doesn't really push it as much lower. Right now, sentiment's so high, just these little things. If you see this really, you know, the SEC is investigating all these financial companies right now. All of them came out of their conference calls and said that. So who knows what's going to come up? But right now, in the middle of financial regulation, you know it's going to be headline risk. And we're at these huge highs right now. I mean, the S&P's up, what, 80, 85%? The Russell's up more than 100% from its lows over the past 12 months. So I think you have to be careful with this, and I think that, you know, this could have a bad effect. And, you know, one last thing I want to mention to you is the SEC did use the word fraud. And when you use the word fraud, that means Goldman Sachs is going to court. That means that's what they're going to do to defend themselves. That means the SEC wasn't looking to settle. They're not looking to settle because fraud is basically you misled investors. And if you have fraud, that's the worst thing you can have for your business. So the fact that they use fraud means that Goldman's going to spend all their money all the time really defending this forever. And so this could drag on a lot longer than expected.
What's your thought though? Is this something? I mean, J.P. Morgan's been dropping off. Goldman's been kind of just, you know, settling out here. Is this?
It's a rotation.
Do you think they have a case against this? I guess my point though is
no. I don't think they have a case. Not this. No, it doesn't seem like they have a case at all. Their case was that the company knew that they didn't know that Goldman was supposed to disclose who was on both sides of the trade, which is ridiculous. And they both knew who was on both sides. So both of those guys knew who was on the other side of the trade. So I don't get it. And right now, I just think you're seeing a rotation into home builders. So many different sectors.
Let's talk about the home builders. So last week on Thursday, we get the existing home sales that do well, right? And then on Friday, we see the new home sales do very well, you know, comparatively and percentage-wise really well. And companies like Lennar and KB Homes and Hunvavian just went berserk. Mm-hmm. You know, a couple of things. First note is, you know, you want to look at all different sides of this whole equation. The first side is that a lot of people rushed in this month to get let's put a caveat on here. It's the potential last of the home builder's credit, right?
Home buyer's
credit. You know, every time there's a last of, it seems that our government renews it.
Yeah.
But let's assume just for the moment that this was the month that it was the last of the home buyer's credit, right? Mm-hmm. And there's a discussion that people said, well, you know what? Not only that, we see interest rates going up a little bit. You know, let's get something. Let's do it now. It can't get any better than this. Okay? So mm-hmm. that was one thing. Do you think that's the case? Or you think that home builders and homes are on the rebound?
Homes are on the rebound. I really believe that. And here's why. I think that, you know, when we're looking at the markets, and I've been a huge, huge bear in the housing industry for such a long time, and I became bearish on the housing industry about 2 months ago, and there's a reason for that, because they changed a major, major tax law for these guys, and they actually, Obama just, by signing his signature, gave Pulte $800 million for free. They allowed them to carry back those losses. Remember, they threw in the kitchen sink in 2008. And billions and billions of losses, which they had to live with, and then all of a sudden they were able to carry back those losses against the gains they had in 2006 and 2005, which were the best years ever for the home builders. So basically, they just wrote themselves a check for that quarter. That's why you saw every home builder beat. But more important is a lot of struggling home builders on that list. And when you give them $100 million, which, by the way, they all lobbied for an average of $200,000, and they made hundreds of millions. So that's a great return on their investment, and they did a good job persuading Obama. But once they did that, I think that was the catalyst, because now these companies, okay, you're seeing, and believe me, I know all the risks. I've highlighted them all before. I know there's more inventory foreclosures. But you know what? Right now, it seems like the cycle is beginning to turn. We're seeing our biggest gains come from when the markets go from terrible to less terrible, not when they go from decent to good. And that's what's going on right now. And I think going forward, remember, the home builders collapsed in 2006. The market collapsed in like 2008, mid-2008 through mid-2009. So they were pretty much collapsing a year and a half before the market. So I do think we come back a little bit. Again, I've been very bearish on this industry. But lately, with that lifeline, those companies which told Obama that, hey, you know what? We need this. This is really important. We need this to happen because we could hire more people. Well, they got the money back, and they all did it in the last quarter. You know what they're doing? They're buying land everywhere. And land is very, very cheap right now.
All right. So aside from the land is cheap. I mean, you say you're bearish on them. So, I mean, I understand. You're bearish or you're bullish? What's the story?
No, I'm bullish on the home builders.
I'm bullish on the home. Okay. So you turned around.
Ever since the tax credit, probably about, and I wrote an article about this about 3 weeks ago. It's time to buy the home builders based on that. I think that made the one argument you had against them is that balance sheets would continue to get weak. That made their balance sheets a lot stronger, where they could easily last for another 2 years. And I figured that's the time to buy. And, you know, I didn't think that the market would go up and some of these stocks would go up 25% in a couple of weeks. It's more of a long-term play. But, yeah, I think it was definitely time to add to home builders.
So let's talk about this ramp up, because, you know, do you think that some of these stocks is it stops that are popping? Is it people believing? Is it money rotating? Is it what's going on? Because the numbers – you know, when you look at a Lennar, for example, it was up 6% on that Thursday. It was up, I don't know, 5% or 6% the day after. And it's like all of a sudden they're great. You know, a new life is being breathed into them. And what's this, you know, is it even though it is a long term discussion here, we're seeing like a Netflix just fly 15% after earnings.
Yeah.
You know, we're seeing other stocks, I mean, down 5 or 6 or 7% also after earnings. But point is, you know, is this movement, this kind of velocity of the movement of certain stocks? It's not across the board, by the way. It's very isolated, right?
But is no, that you know where it's isolated to? It's isolated to the ones that have the largest short positions. Homebuilders are the most shortest sector in the market. And it's amazing. That's why you're seeing this massive move that nobody really expected. I mean, you know, my thesis is based long term. I think it's a great time to buy. And you know, I'm looking at Standard Pacific to put my newsletter at $4.50. It's $7 today. So it's ridiculous. And this is 2-3 weeks ago. This is 3 weeks ago,
which
is ridiculous. You know, I'm not patting myself in the back, giving myself credit. I'm actually upset that you're seeing these massive moves. But they're happening, and Netflix is a shorter company. You're seeing them in the companies that are shorted the most because it's so easy. I mean, even Palm had a breakout there for a minute. I mean, just what it would take over rumors. So you know, you're seeing the major move come from the stocks that are shorted the most because, you know, with this such a little volume, it just seems like it's so easy to either say something or just bring these guys up. You actually have hedge fund guys on TV. I don't know when that happened, but it recently happened where hedge fund guys, remember they used to be a secret. You never knew them. You never knew what they looked like. Mm-hmm. They're all over TV talking their books. You know, Paulson saying that, oh, China's going to crash. You know, he never had to go on TV and tell us that. He just took a position. Now they're taking these positions. Einhorn talk about Moody's and emails between employees that you know, you're a hedge fund. You talk about emails between employees on Moody's. I'm just like, these guys are just, I don't know. I guess that's the way to make money these days. But you have to be careful shorting those stocks or with those high short positions. Very dangerous.
No, I agree. And you know, you look at Netflix as a prime example, not taking anything away from this company at all. And a beautiful quarter. But, you know, probably, I don't know, 4 weeks up to the earnings announcement, there were a lot of downgrades. And a lot of valuation downgrades primarily. And then, you know, the stock just continues higher and just blows out, you know, the earnings. It's pretty impressive, don't get me wrong. But it's interesting that the analysts seem to either, you know, have it wrong or they're giving in at this point, and that's why they're doing a lot of these upgrades of pricing. How many times, by the way, have we seen that, you know, that they're reducing an analyst is reducing their rating on the stock but increasing
their price?
What does that mean?
I have no idea what that means. That means you should be fired. That's what that means. You should say, okay, I was wrong. It's okay to be wrong. We're all wrong sometimes. It's okay. If you're wrong more times than you're right, then we got to get new jobs. But, you know, it's just if you're saying that, well, we reiterate our short rating, but raising our target, and this is from a stock from SanDisk. I'm not going to tell you what firm it was, but they raised their target from 23 to 31 and maintain their sell rating. I mean, that is a terrible job research. I mean, just say, hey, listen, we didn't expect this. We're raising the target. Here's a neutral rating. You're keeping your short position, but you're raising your target by 30-40%. I mean, come on, man. What is going on?
Well, the problem is
I want to work for that firm.
Why it's such a bad call, Frank, is because it's confusing. It's confusing to the investor.
Absolutely.
You know, and that's what I think the biggest problem is, that it doesn't give any clarity, doesn't give any, you know, and if we're trying to look at, or if an investor, for that matter, looking at whether it's buy or sell side research, and this is oftentimes a sell side, you know, what is an investor supposed to think? That, you know, we really don't like this stock, but, you know, since it's moving higher, we're going to move our price higher too.
Yeah, it just, I really don't get. I mean, even when it comes to like Standard Pacific, I look at a company like that because you said how, you know, these companies just keep moving higher. I mean, even the highest price target, which means, and this is something I look at because it lets you see what the expectations are on the stocks. So I don't look at it and say, wow, JP Morgan thinks the stock's going higher, so I'm going to buy it. But I like to know the expectations on a stock because if they're high, and I really don't want to buy that stock going into the quarter because an inline quarter could push a stock down 10%. So it's just something like I'm conscious of, especially in earnings season. Now, you know, you look at the highest target price on Standard Pacific, it's 6, and the stock is, you know, hit over 7 today. And, you know, that's the highest. I mean, if you're looking at the highest target price for Apple, I want to say it's probably like $3.50. It's still within there. But it just tells you, like, even the analysts that cover these stocks for the longest time, and even the insiders are selling like 20% ago in some of these stocks.
Right.
They just continue to go higher, which really should scare the hell out of you. We're in a very... you know, you want to say you always like to buy stocks where, okay, it's you know, high reward, low risk, and it's kind of opposite right now because there's a lot of risk and there's low reward. Now, it doesn't mean stocks can go higher from here. It just means that I think you could have more downside than upside. So, you know, it's not really a good scenario to buy some of these stocks, I think.
Well, last week we had on a gentleman. We talked about the whole idea of direction, trends, moving averages, and clearly we are in a bullish environment. When you see a market down 1.3%, 1%, and then push higher for the day, really on very little news, or pushing down a little news, or pushing up a little news, little volume. There was a day last week or the week before that about 50 or 60% of the total volume of the market was in four or five stocks. Citi, AIG, I think it was Bank of America and somebody else. Maybe Ford? That was it. That was it for the day.
Mm-hmm.
60%, which tells you that the retail investor is still not there, but yet at the same time, it also tells you, more importantly, that the float of the whole market can be moved around very easily. We know that. We've seen that. Yeah. And that's good. So it benefits us if we're long in any of these names, of course, and any of the names that are getting scooped up along with the the future indices and any of the options. That's something that's been going on and probably go on for some time in the future. But I think that, just to kind of close up today, I wanted to touch on the whole Greece matter with you. It looks like that Greece is now finally, after being pushed to their limits, looking to get a bridge loan or a some kind of a backstop from whether it's going to be the IMF and the EU or a combination of the two, and they're going to get below market interest rates. Basically, mm-hmm. We know this, and we don't have to go into this, that they're breaking a lot of rules by doing this, right? Mm-hmm. But it doesn't seem like they have a choice in the matter. Greece has been lying. The prime minister, you can't believe a word this guy says. He mm-hmm. says for every day that they're not going to, and they haven't been talking to anyone about any kind of getting any kind of a backstop or loans or a bailout. And at the same time, obviously they have been, and this is all structured. And then all of a sudden he comes out within 2 weeks saying, okay, we give in, we need this money. And, now we have the potential contagion in the area of Portugal and Spain, but it doesn't seem like anybody really cares about this too much.
No, and I wouldn't care about Greece too much. And yes, I did say that. And here's why. It's funny because could it be a major problem? Yes, it could, but it won't be. And one of the reasons why, I don't want to say it can't fail, but it's not going to fail right now. And I think that's because it's terrible for the euro, but they have plenty of sources to get cash. We're coming through a market where our government bailed out everybody, and you know what? Everybody hated it. The government's starting to make money on these deals. So I think there's people lined up. I mean, you got Germany, you got France, you got the IMF. You probably have private investors that would be happy to invest in Greece and have great turns, just like Warren Buffett did with Harley Davidson, with Goldman Sachs. I mean, the warrants that he got and 50% interest he's making on the loan that he gave Harley Davidson. So I think there's people lined up around the block right now to really bail out Greece. So I don't think it's a factor with the market. I know people who understand the situation are going to say I'm absolutely crazy, but I'm just saying that as far as with the equity markets and here, I just think that Greece will get bailed out. We'll listen. I try to pay attention to the story. I know a lot about it. And like you said, the guy talks out of both ends of his mouth. You don't know, one day he's getting bailed out, the next day they're okay, the next day they're getting bailed out. Like, he doesn't even know what he wants. But I do know there's a lot of people willing to bail them out right now for some reason. And Greece is in a lot, and you provide a great chart on this on your Disciplined Investor site, where Greece is in a lot worse shape than a lot of the other countries, the other biggest countries. Now, it doesn't mean those countries aren't going to need to get bailed out, but Greece is really a lot worse than those right now. So I wouldn't really focus on that because I think they will get bailed out. I think if they don't get bailed out, it's bad for a lot of other places as well. So, and there are investors line up to do it, especially with the conditions much, much better now.
Yeah. And at the same time, I think that there is the idea that, that has been baked into the market that nothing fails because nothing does fail. I mean, Lehman was a hiccup in terms mm-hmm. of fail. It shouldn't have happened. Everybody recognizes that, at least the administration, the governments, that shouldn't happen. That can't happen again, because if it does, boy, look at what happened with the basically a credit market freezing up and basically the whole world financial community's freezing up. They're still trying to figure out each end of who is mm-hmm. owed what with Lehman, and then you have the AIG situation. I mean, talk about the ultimate bailout that's kind of behind a closed door still and very shrouded in a lot of secrecy. But at the same time, there's that going on. So I tend to agree with you that the Greece situation is not per se a problem for us as much. But is it a problem for Europe? That's the question. Is it going to kind of stymie their overall, between not only Greece, but Spain and Portugal? Is it going to stymie their recovery? Yes. I've always, it has to, right?
Yeah, I think it will. And let me phrase that, because I'm coming from the equity side. We're talking about companies here. And when I took my Series 7 when I was a lot younger, I had a teacher, and his job was just to make sure you pass a Series 7. That was it. So when you asked him a question, he said not in the test. That was his answer, not in the test. That means the question's irrelevant if you, you know, so don't even bother putting that in your head. And with Greece right now, if you're looking at our equity market, I just think it's kind of like not on the test where, you know, could have implications. I really do. I think that right now, I mean, we've been talking about, you know, people have been saying Greece, that's it. That's the catalyst. Now all those big countries are going to go in there. You know what? And these guys, people have been investing in the equity market and they're up 15% just buying S&P. So, you know what? I just see so many. You want to see if there's funding available. That's the first thing you want to see. And there's plenty of funding available right now for these guys. So that doesn't worry me as much. So, you know, as some of the risks, I just think that there's plenty more risk to worry about than Greece right now. That's all I'm saying.
Like what?
Like earnings are starting to get up there. We're about, you know, and again, I'm talking from someone that thinks the market's going higher, but. You know, if we go another, what, say 5% higher, we're pushing, what, 1,300 on the S&P, right? You know, we're kind of in shades of our all-time high there, you know? So it's pretty crazy considering that our markets would be near our all-time high with 10% unemployment, with our deficits greater than they've ever been in this country, with interest rates zero. Why is the Fed keeping them at zero if we're near all-time high? So that worries me. That, you know, we're going up too far too fast, and it's making me nervous. I thought that, you know, earnings would be good and we go up a little bit. You know, like I talked about the home builders. Home builders are up 35% in a couple of weeks. It's ridiculous, ridiculous. So, you know, I think there's other risks even on the valuation end, on a dead end that we worry about. But I'm not really too concerned with Greece. That's just a little bit further down my list right now.
But on a valuation standpoint, let me ask you this. Is it possible that the high levels of unemployment are the reason why we have high valuations? In other words, you know, companies went out and this is the basic thesis that I'm kind of going under right now. Companies went out and they issued a massive amount of debt when they could. They brought that in to stabilize their balance sheets. Okay, great. They retired debt that was too high in cost, et cetera. They went out and they fired a ton of people, thus, of course, you know, cleaning up their expense sheets, if you will, because, you know, and bringing in technology to retrofit and to replace and create high efficiency, high productivity as best as possible. You know, once we saw a little bit of demand come back, you know, these companies now all of a sudden had kind of this amazing ability to squeeze out net margins, right? You know, and that, when you look at that, they don't have to have the revenues as they did before. So they cut out a lot of the fat and therefore their earnings are on par. The question is, I guess the real question is, you know, is there a point that is, you know, you have to balance carefully to see any growth here? You know, you get the maximum efficiency with cost reduction, expense cutting, redesigning, reengineering, technology, etc. And then what happens after that? You know, you can keep your profitability where it is, but how do you grow? You know, and like many of these companies that are opening up new stores, bringing on people. I mean, one of the things, they looked at Google's numbers and they said, you know what, they brought on like 1,000 people and maybe that was hurting some of their bottom line.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder if employment starts up again, that's the risk. You know, opposite of what you're saying a little bit, where you're saying...
I don't know if that's a risk. You know what? These companies are not going to hire unless they really, really need to. I mean, I think we know that with their stocks coming back, some of them, their stocks come back all the way and trading at their all-time high, not just their 52-week high, some of these stocks. And they're still, like, you know, not really hiring because they don't know what's going on with the future. But the only way they're going to hire is if demand is really, really there. And that's why you're seeing, like, you'll see a company like Intel has thousands, you know, tens of thousands of employees. They're like, yeah, we're hiring 500 guys. And, you know, it gets headline news that they're hiring 1,000 guys. And it turns out to be like 1%. You know, it's just they're hiring people. They're not really hiring that much. And plus, you know, as they're hiring people, they don't tell you that they're laying. You know, if you look at the net number after the quarter, sometimes it turns out to be like 700 people because they're laying off people in other divisions. So, you know, I don't know if that's so much of a risk, but you did touch up on like revenue and growth. There are pockets of growth out there. I mean, we saw the internet, and I mean, the internet just continues to grow. Even through, I mean, you saw the stocks get killed, but if you're looking at like internet of how big it's going and where we're going and videos and search and stuff like that, it just continues to grow. You're looking at oil. It's more difficult to find oil than ever, but there's new technology, you know, so you know, horizontal drilling, deep water drilling, and you're seeing new fields in Texas, some of the biggest fields ever in Texas now because we're able to drill horizontally.
Right.
So there's pockets of growth in the market that you could find. But, you know, again, when you're talking about the earnings side, I understand the cost cutting, but the revenue side, you really have to look. You'd love to see that top line number, which is revenues, go higher. And I think you will see it go higher in some industries, but it's going to be difficult.
I hear you. There's lots to talk. I mean, lots going on here. We covered Obama's discussion about the financials, Goldman and the SEC, Greece, big moves in stock. Are they justified? The housing data, ecos look better, earnings season. What else we missed? We talked about steel. We talked about one last thing I think we'll hit upon.
Sure.
You and I have talked about for the last several weeks about my thesis on the idea that the gaming industry, particularly the suppliers of, let's say, slot machines, et cetera, may do very well in an environment that the states are looking to make up the holes in their budgets. And by doing so, they'd have to find ways to either cut their costs or bring in more revenue. They're not going to bring more revenue in from taxes. They, you know, they're having difficulty collecting as it is what they're due for their, whether it's the real estate tax or whether property taxes, et cetera. So my thought was that a lot of these states may buckle and start looking at the gaming industry, slot machines and maybe table games, and looking at them to possibly fill some of those holes. And we identified a few of those companies, IGT, WMS Industries, Bally's. What do you think about that? I mean, they're doing extraordinarily well right now.
I think there's a lot of tailwind. It's not just you're talking about the states who are dying for revenue, and they're actually putting slot machines in racetracks, which are called racinos. And if you look at the studies and you look at the numbers of how much that the taxes they're being able to collect off of these things, and you have these people going there gambling, and it's better for the racetracks because they're getting more people in there. So it's almost a win-win-win situation, except for the people who are like, hey, you shouldn't really be gambling. But you know what? If it's not gambling, you're going to either legalize marijuana or let prisoners out early. So, you have your choice there.
I think sounds like a party, buddy.
Yeah, it sounds like a party. I know, right? You're going to get the prisoners selling marijuana at casinos. But and that would probably be great for the state in terms of taxing. But I think the casino market is going to open up. Plus, you're seeing better numbers in Vegas. Macau is great right now. And I'm going to tell you guys something that no one else is really talking about is they're calling a place in Manila the next Macau, and they're starting to build casinos there. More important, they actually opened up and they signed laws. The president of the country signed laws that are allowing foreign investors to go into, which is very big. When Macau really took off is when they had Las Vegas Sands, MGM, Wynn being allowed to open up casinos there. You're seeing this here, in that area. They're known for two things. They're known for being very good bowlers and very good big gamblers. So I think that's a great thing because I think they're going to, the gambling environment right there, you're giving the people what they want, and I think that's going to be another catalyst for these guys. And, the supplies are going to benefit as well. I think they're in good position. They're not too expensive here, and I think they have a lot of tailwinds, not just what you're talking about, which I think is great. Is a great catalyst. But also, I think the casino markets are getting better. We saw the numbers come out with Vegas that were much better than expected.
Yeah, much better than expected. And it's funny, and anytime you see, I guess, both the housing and the casino market in tandem, when you see better employment numbers come out, immediately they jump into casino stocks, mm-hmm. investors. We think that, that could be a real interesting catalyst. I mean, whether or not some of these guys are a little bit overvalued right now, the Wynn's, Las Vegas Sands, right at this moment, compared to what their earnings were, and what they projected to be, is, entirely nothing. I think the funniest thing of all when it comes to the casinos is their earnings, how predictable they could be if people are actually in the casinos. In other words, that means that for every person that spends X amount of time in a casino, they're going to make that much money on them. And that's predictable. There's never, you hardly ever hear something from the casinos that, we had a really rough quarter. The players really beat us up pretty badly.
No, that never happens. And I watched a 2020 special. I think it was on 60 Minutes. And they actually could tell just by you going there five times, it's amazing. Like they keep the statistics that, what month you like to go there the most, when they'll target you in mails, and this way you'll stay there for a free night and everything, and what you like to eat, and they'll send you, hey, you can go to this buffet. I mean, the technology is amazing. And real quick, that leads to one of the picks that I know you talk about is Shuffle Master, where they actually have, you're used to table games and sitting down with chips. They actually have like an electronic thing built in, which is almost a touch screen. And one thing that does is it's better for security because you're not touching the chips and, there's less chance for fraud. But also it keeps accurate statistics. And Vegas is all about statistics. They have enormous amount of data going in on each person that's there, their trends and everything. And by doing that, how much they bet, what tables are going to be at, they can determine what hotels you're going to be at. And all that stuff, I think, it really factors in. It's a really remarkable
thing. I will tell you something about Shuffle Master. We had it and we decided to go. We bought it. We made a little bit of a profit. We moved out of it for a couple of reasons. I will tell you, I know that was short right now. But, the CEO just – do you see the news on the CEO?
Yep, took a leave of absence.
Leave of absence for like 4 to 6 weeks on a stomach
issue.
He's
sick, though, isn't he?
Yeah, that just gives me all sorts of kind of concerns. I got to tell you something. It's not the biggest concerns. It's small cap, thinly traded. But we'll maybe get back into it. We decided to go into Bally's instead. We kind of said, you know what? Let's be in a bigger company with better float, if you will, more shares traded. You know, because we saw a lot of movement in ShuffleMaster that was just not right with the market, you know, not right with the rest of the, what they were doing. And every single time we looked at a, you know, a statement by a state, we looked at the statements and we saw that every single time they talked about the amount of slot machines they would be buying and very, very, very little about table games. I don't know. So we'll see. I mean, you know, that's something we can look at. I mean, Bally's were up nicely on. WMS were up huge on. WMS Industries, that's a great little player when it comes to that. IGT came out with numbers this week and just blew the doors off of the numbers and projections, and that was pretty cool. So that's kind of helped out all that. But yeah, the whole industry definitely sees some opportunity. We're going to end with that. Frank Curzio, he can be found at, what's the best way? Where can people find you?
FrankCurzio.com. I mean, the guys, and it's not me, it's the guys at Stansberry that goes right to my Facebook page, and the guys at Stansberry really make it easy for me where I can just type in information and all my podcasts, all my write-ups, everything, videos could be found there. FrankCurzio.com, and you could have links to everything, my newsletter, whatever you need.
No, you're the best. I mean, if you haven't gotten it before, Frank writes an under $10 stock, used to be called penny stocks, they're not really penny stocks, but an under $10 stock newsletter, and has a very active role with this new company he's with and loving it. And now he is in quite sunny and beautiful Northern Florida.
Northern Florida.
And loving it up there. So Frank Curzio, thanks for joining me today on the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
Thanks, bud. I appreciate it.
And everybody out there, thanks for joining me today. I told you we're going to have a great time with Frank, and he's such a knowledgeable guy, knows everything that's going on in all these different markets, can talk to him about absolutely anything, and that's why I use him as a personal reference resource and a bit of a mentor, I must tell you. And he is just a superb individual, a great analyst, and overall, I encourage you to check out the things that he does. Until next week, we hope that you have a great week ahead, a profitable week. Of course, be safe. Watch what's going on in the news. Check out thedisciplinedinvestor.com. And if you have any questions, you know where to find me. Hopefully, you'll enjoy our upcoming guests that we have slated. We have some traders coming up. We have some people on commodities. And we're also going to talk once again to some of the favorites that you had. I'll keep some of those as a surprise because, you know, we haven't had the exact dates yet, but we know that they are going to be coming back to talk to us. Harry Dent actually is going to be booked and coming up very shortly as well. Until next time, thanks for joining me. This is Andrew Horowitz signing off. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor regulated by the SEC. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.